If you would, please turn in your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 23. We're getting near the middle of this book. It's been enjoyable. I've enjoyed studying it, finding how practical it is for real life. It's been difficult, but as we work through this section, I think you'll find it a little bit easier to be able to connect with the themes, the truths that God shares with us through his servant this morning. Isaiah 23, it's 18 verses long. We'll read that and pray. The Bible says in Isaiah 23, "The oracle concerning Tyre. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is laid waste without house or harbor. From the land of Cyprus it is revealed to them. Be still, or be silent, O inhabitants of the coast. The merchants of Sidon who crossed the sea have filled you. And on many waters your revenue was the grain of Shihor, the harvest of the Nile. You were the merchant of the nations. Be ashamed, O Sidon. For the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying, I have neither labored nor given birth. I have neither reared young men nor brought up young women. When the report comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish over the report about Tyre. Cross over to Tarshish. Wail, O inhabitants of the coast. Is this your exultant city, whose origin is from days of old, whose feet carried her to settle far away? Who has purposed this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants were princes, whose traders were the honored of the earth? The Lord of hosts has purposed it, to defile the pompous pride of all beauty or glory, to dishonor all the honored of the earth. Cross over your land like the Nile, O daughter of Tarshish. There is no restraint anymore. He has stretched out his hand over the sea. He has shaken the kingdoms. The Lord has given command concerning Canaan to destroy its strongholds. And he said, you will no more exalt, O oppressed virgin daughter of Sidon. Arise, cross over to Cyprus. Even there you will have no rest. Behold the land of the Chaldeans. This is the people that was not. Assyria destined it for wild beasts. They erected their siege towers. They stripped her palaces bare. They made her a ruin. So wail, O ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold is laid waste. In that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, like the days of one king. At the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre, as in the song of the prostitute. Take a harp. Go about the city, O forgotten prostitute. Make sweet melody. Sing many songs that you may be remembered. At the end of 70 years, the Lord will visit Tyre, and she will return to her wages, and will prostitute herself with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. Her merchandise and her wages will be holy to the Lord. It will not be stored or hoarded, but her merchandise will supply abundant food and fine clothing for those who dwell before the Lord. Well, everybody loves a good story, right? City mouse, the country mouse. The city mouse comes and tells his country bumpkin cousin, hey, this is my life in the city. The little mouse gets excited, goes to the big city to find out all the splendors, and finds out that life there isn't all it's cracked up to be, and finds the first train home, right? But everybody loves a good story, and everybody enjoys a good storyteller. Everybody longs to be a part of the story that's told by a good storyteller. You want to be a part of that narrative. You want to join in. It's part of our fallen creaturely DNA to believe the lie that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, right? Wow, what a stupid creature. Yeah, that's us with horns, right? So it's not unique to animals. It's not unique to beef. Other varieties of edible animals are subject to the same, and non-edible animals.
But we're all, this is our condition. We think, if only I were not in this story, but in that story. If only I wasn't on this side of the fence, but on that side of the fence. It's interesting that as we come to this text, we're right in the middle of the Winter Olympics. They're in full swing. And we've got all these different people who are at their peak, striving to showcase to the world how well they can perform at whatever discipline they've given their lives to up to this point. Tonight, we get to see the Super Bowl as we have contestants battling for the place of prominence on the gridiron. Part of the story that the world tells us is that with enough effort, it's possible for you to be a hero in this story. But the flip side of that reality is that if you're not a winner, you're a what? You're a loser. Okay? I always get the backwards. No, I'm kidding. Okay. If you're not a winner, you're a loser. Nobody remembers second place to the Super Bowl. Nobody remembers second place to the World Series. We only remember heroes. Anybody remember who comes in fourth place in the Olympics? They don't count that. It just doesn't even matter. Why? Because if you're not a winner, you're a loser. And Satan drives that home into our hearts. Guess what? You're not a winner. 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 Look at your life this week. You're not a winner. That means you're a what? Sinner saved by grace, right? Praise God. I'm a saint. But only because of Jesus. I'm not defined by my performance, but I am defined by the performance of the one who is the hero in this story. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. In this chapter, Isaiah is reminding his audience that while the world tells a good story, you cannot afford to be a part of it. Because the end of the world's story that wants to make a hero out of you ends in a cosmic tragedy. You can be on top of the world, but the end of this story is devastating. To use a technical term, the world ends in apocalypse. This is the expectation of an imminent cosmic cataclysm in which God destroys the ruling powers of evil and raises the righteous to a life of messianic kingdom. Merriam-Webster. The world is going to end. This world is going to end. Those trophies, those Super Bowl rings, what's going to happen to them? Meltdown, burned up. Then what? It's gone. It's gone. Everything you gave your entire life to chasing down is gone in the end. The point of this message this morning, because it's the point of the passage, is that you are living your life within a story. You are. But the question is, which one? Which story are you living your life in? We've talked about this so many times. I don't mean to be redundant. But the book of Isaiah is all about this. Which story are you living in? What is reality in your life? It's the same thing with the book of Revelation. Whose story are you living in? The Christ's story or the Antichrist's story? Those are the only two stories that are available. They're the only two stories that you can occupy. And in neither story are you the hero, though the Antichrist would tell you that you get to be. Jesus is honest. He says, "You're not a hero, but I love you. Let me be your hero. And why don't you enter into my story? And why don't you let me go to prepare a place for you rather than you preparing a place for yourself?" So as we work through this, I want us to see this morning three landmarks of the biblical worldview. They're convictional landmarks. These pieces have to be in place if you would have a biblical view of the world that you live in. The life that you occupy. These three landmarks have to be in place if you're a follower of Jesus. And as we look at them, they're not going to be profound. They're going to be rather simple. Praise God. But as we look at this, you'll see these are a part of my life. This is what makes sense of life. Because I forget the basics, everything becomes so complicated, right? Who was it? Was it Vance? Who was it that held up? Said, "Men, this is a football." Right? Getting back to the basics. We just do the basics. And that's what this chapter is calling us to do. Do the basics. Get these pieces in place in your life, and life will have success, not defined by the world, but defined by God. So as we jump in, we'll see landmark number one is judgment. There is judgment. There will come an end of the world as we know it. So this landmark has to be in place. God is a God of justice. He brings judgment on planet Earth. This corresponds to the great reality that we are bad. We deserve judgment. From Genesis 3 forward, this whole story anticipates God's judgment on planet Earth. And when God's judgment comes, life as we know it will cease to be. For Adam and Eve, when God's judgment came and intervened in their life of failure, in their life of rebellion, in their life of sin, in a life that defined themselves at the center of their own story, what happened? They were removed from the garden, and cherubim were set at the entrance with flaming swords that said, "You shall not pass." Okay. This is a new reality. Everything that they knew, cultivating the garden, now it's a garden filled with thorns and thistles. Walking around, needing no covering, now being acutely aware of the fact that I am exposed wherever I turn to whatever eyes would voyeuristically gaze upon me and use me for themselves. Life changes when God's judgment comes. Not everything will be as it now is. For us who are believers, that's a good thing. We're excited for that end of the story. "And there shall be no more tears, no more crying, no more sorrow, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." No death, no night, no chaos monster called the sea, only a river that brings life to the city of God. Only a tree of life from which all of his people will eat. What an amazing reality. So, verse 1, this is the oracle concerning Tyre. All right. So, where was Tyre? And why is Tyre so important? Well, Tyre was located just north of Galilee on the seacoast there on the Mediterranean Sea. So, all of this is ocean. See, it's located right on the coast, and the word Tyre actually means rock. So oftentimes, Tyre is referred to as the city built on the rock, but there was a second part of Tyre, which was right here on the coast. So this harbor would be the place where ships would come, obviously, with a bunch of land, keeping the ocean from banging and crashing against the shore. This is a beautiful, beautiful setup to land your ships, to be able to drop off all the cargo that you need in order to run necessity farms. This is where everything gets dropped off. This is the warehouse. This is Costco. This is the restaurant depot. This is where everything happens. Oftentimes, this city was attacked. And when that happened, people just took to their boats, went 500 yards out into the ocean, climbed into their fortress on the rock, and they waited out the army that didn't bring ships with them at the time. And if they did, well, guess what? They have all these vessels way out here that are coming back at any given time to help Mother Tyre in her battles. So they just wait out whatever conflict it was until finally in 332 BC when Alexander the Great tore down the city And he took all the rubble of the city and built a causeway so that he could get all of his siege machines across. And he pummeled the walls of the city of Tyre out on the rock. And when he got through, he took 2,000 of the leaders and he crucified them. And then he took 30,000 of the inhabitants and he sold them as slaves. But this is Tyre. Why is it so important? Because Tyre, located here on the coast, the Mediterranean Sea, is basically the entrance into all of Asia. So you have everything from India, China, Babylon, Persia, Syria, Assyria, Saudi Arabia. All these people are bringing their wares to Tyre, and then with the mountains to her back and the sea to her face, she looks west. And she goes all the way across the Mediterranean Sea through the Straits of what is that? The Rock of Gibraltar, right? Through the Straits of Gibraltar. And you see this little town here called Tartessus. Tartessus is probably what is called Tarshish. Or it may be this whole region here in Spain on this peninsula, Tarshish. But this is the reach of tiny little Tyre. She's got ports down in Egypt, over in Libya, up in Italy, over in Greece, up in northern Africa. She's down at Carthage. She is all over the world. You can see some of the different things that she's mining. She's getting gold and luxury items from Africa. She's getting tin and silver from Spain. She is all over the globe. And when everything comes to her, everything goes out from her. So everybody's coming to Tyre, not Costco. They're coming to Tyre to get everything they need to do life in the modern world. They're in the ancient Near East. So Sidon is just 25 miles north of Tyre. And for most of ancient history, they are the primary players on the coast. And they're an outlet for the continent of Asia. Herodotus dates this city to at least 2750 BC. So roughly the time of Abraham, older than Abraham, who would have been there about 2000 or so. This is an old city. Ancient. That's why down in verse 7. Is this your exalted city whose origin is from days of old? This is written 800 BC. He said, this has been around for 2,000 years. This is a really old city, a really important city. So as we understand what's happening here, God says, this city, which has been around forever, is going to have an expiration date. Like old milk, you're going to pull it out of the refrigerator, you're going to throw it away. It's done, it's expired, it's gone, its influence is erased, it's stripped, it's melted down, it's over, the end. And so as we look at this, it's an influential city, but its influence isn't primarily military. It's not out there trying to conquer people, trying to establish settlements where like the Roman army, or Babylon would go in and conquer and seek conquest as they develop themselves and develop the places upon which their enemies claimed for themselves. This is an economic influence. It's the global epicenter of commercialism and consumerism. That sound like any nation on planet Earth that you might know today? The global epicenter of commercialism, capitalism, consumerism. This might have some rather poignant connections to where we stand in the 21st century in the United States of America. Just keep that in mind, okay, as we work through this passage. This is a political influence that it asserts, because whoever holds the money holds the power, right? I mean, the military has to be paid, or they start to get restless. So whoever holds the money holds the power. And as the global influencers, they're going out, they're putting their merchants in Carthage. They're putting their merchants in Italy. They're putting their merchants in Spain. They're putting their merchants in Egypt. And when they do, guess what? Everybody works through their merchants. So the politics of that community works through the commercial influence of Tyre and Sidon. That's why down in verse 8, she's called the bestower of crowns. Who has purposed this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants are princes and traders are the honored of the earth? This is the influence that Tyre had throughout the entire ancient Near Eastern Mediterranean world. Oh, starts to put some pieces together, doesn't it? You've heard of Carthage, you've heard of Rome, you've heard of Athens. All of these cities have been visited by Tyrian traders. Their cultures were built on the culture established by Tyre. This is a key player. It's touching every single life on that Mediterranean seacoast. So when Tyre goes down, who's affected? Everyone. As he brings this city to light, he wants us to understand that this is a paradigmatic city. This is a city that stands for other cities. In the same way that Babylon, back in chapter 13, was kind of a climax of these are the ways of the world, and God is going to bring it to an end. Now at the end of this oracle of nations, God is using Tyre in the exact same way. Babylon, Tyre. Look at how God's put this together. Ray Ortlund writes, the prophetic eye merges eastern Babylon, far to the east of Israel, with western Tyre. Maybe we should use east and west because that's how we're sitting. Okay. Eastern Babylon, western Tyre, whose influence goes all the way out beyond the Rock of Gibraltar to Tarshish. Okay. Everything that's known to the ancient Near East at this time, God is spanning this. And he's bringing these two together into one understanding of the world. Babylon and Tyre together typify all human society. Babylon symbolizes ruthless political power. Tyre symbolizes dishonest commercial success. Babylon is a land power. Tyre is a sea power. Babylon uses force. Tyre uses seduction. This is the world in which we live. These are the stories that we occupy. Might makes right. Anything for money. And over and over and over and over again, that chorus is being recited. The refrain is being sung. And you can't help but occupy that time and space in this way. It's just how the world works, quote unquote. And if you would get ahead in this world, you've got to play by the rules of the game. Babylon and Tyre are writing the rules of the game. They're telling you the story by which you need to occupy planet Earth. Make sense? That's one of these questions. Does this make sense? Okay. We're on the same page. So what's the effect of Tyre's fall, downfall? Verse 1, the oracle, the revelation from God to man about Tyre. He says, wail. I'm not going to do it this morning. It's when the child slams their thumb in the door. It's not like, that hurts, Mom. It's like, yeah! Right? Wail. We got the sirens going. Okay. Whale Tarshish, actually ships of Tarshish, because Tyre is laid waste. There's something about this city that is done, it's gone. She doesn't have houses, she doesn't have harbor. So these ships of Tarshish, the ones that are capable for the long haul, they're going to cross the entire Mediterranean Sea. The ones who are bringing stuff from this coast to this coast. These are the big daddies of the ocean. These are the ocean liners, if you will. So the ships of Tarshish, they're coming back, middle of verse 1. From the land of Cyprus, it's revealed to them. Well, Cyprus is just off the coast, right over here from Tyre. So on their way across from Tarshish, they probably stopped in Sicily. They're hitting different places. They stop by Cyprus, or ships from Cyprus are meeting them on their way back. And they're saying, listen, you've had a long journey. You've weathered some tough storms. You've got a boatload of cargo, literally. You're weighed down with monies because you've traded out west. Here's the news. Don't bother going home. There is no wife. There is no girlfriend. There is no bar. There is no house. There is no bed. There's nothing. You've lost it all. While you were gone, it's done. Been wiped away. It's gone. Everything that you're dreaming of, everything that you're aching for, everything you're longing to see, it's gone. It's evaporated. Everything you've given your life to, everything you've given your life for, it's gone. Don't bother going home. All the nightclubs, all the drinking spaces, all the friends, all the family, all the lands, all the investments, all the clothes, all the everything, it's done. You get that news today. I'm sorry, but your investment portfolio is now at zero. Like, wait, what? You're joking, right? No, I'm serious as a heart attack. Everything is gone. Game changer. I was banking. My future. I'm sorry. It's done. Verse 2. Be silent, inhabitants of the coast. The merchants of Sidon who crossed the sea and come back with all their goods, they filled you up on many waters. Your revenue was the grain of Shihor. It's probably the eastern branch of the Nile as it comes up in the delta there. Shihor. You've carried the grains, the harvest of the Nile. You were the merchant of the nations. You thought you were such big stuff. You kind of strutted. You could throw your chest out. You could throw your weight around. You could say something and people would listen. He says, just shut up. Because anything you thought you knew is done. The whole economy that you were at the head of, nobody is looking to you as a financial advisor from this moment forward. Just shut up. Be quiet. Don't even bother talking. Because you know nothing. This Ponzi scheme called the world is one day going to be brought to account. And when it is, what are they going to say? I guess we were wrong. I'm sorry. What can they say? Verse 4. In your silence, in your stillness, be ashamed, O Sidon. The sea has spoken. The sea there doesn't have the article, the. It may be used as a proper noun, the name Yam, the god of the sea. Tyrians would consider themselves basically the gods of the sea. They didn't recognize Jehovah as God, and so their primary god was Yam, the god of the sea, who would bless their journeys, their efforts as they went out across the sea. So the sea speaks. The mighty fortress that you have rested in, the sea, the chaos monster, says, yeah, everything that I had is gone. I have not labored. I've not given birth. I've not reared young men. I've not brought up young women. Everything that has grown up here is gone. It's as if I didn't ever raise this family. The people that are from Tyre.
Yeah.
What Tyre? What do you mean? What people? They're gone. They're dead. They're gone. It's done. It's as if everything I've labored and given birth to and raised and focused on, it's gone. Vapor, dust, ashes, removed. Be ashamed, because you put your trust in this God. You put your trust in this God, and this God says, I've got nothing for you. I'm sorry, I can't help you. I'm as worthless as you are now. And guess what? Because you've chased me in my worthlessness, you are now as worthless as I am. Verse 5, when the report comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish over the report about Tyre. Anguish has, again, that idea of wailing, but being in not just pain, but being in emotional horror, pain, unable to get away. You ever had a headache that you just can't get away from? A migraine, maybe. It controls you. That's the idea of being under the control of something that hurts so bad and you can barely give vent to anguish. Then he says in verse 6, run. Cross over to Tarshish. Go as far away from Tyre as you can go. Run to the coast. Run to the farthest corner of the planet. Get away from here. Because if you stay here, you will die. You're done. You're dead. Wail, O inhabitants of the coast, whether it's Cyrene, Corinth, Syracuse, Carthage, Utica, it doesn't matter where you find yourself. You've done business with my people, and now it's come to an end. This is more than the fall of a city. The whole world is affected. Every corner of the Mediterranean. And a feeling of incredulity, Paul writes, a feeling of incredulity grips the international community as no one can remember a time when Tyre has not dominated the commercial world with great vitality and bustling life. When somebody said Tyre, when somebody said Sidon, it's like, oh yeah, and if I make it there, I'll make it anywhere, right? It's up to you. Tyre and Sidon. I'm going there. It's connections. It's networking. I have the world at my feet if I can get there. Make the connections. Find my way. Become something. There's three aspects of Tyre's existence that make it hard to accept her destruction. Verse 7. Is this your exultant city? Exultant. Has the idea of being full of excitement, riches, noise, carousing, nightlife. This is the nation that had everything going for it. Influence. And it's done. Is this your exuberant city? Is this your exalting city? Is this your loud, noisy, boisterous, fun, flamboyant city? Where to go? Secondly, is this your city whose origin is from days of old? There's never been a time in the history of our imaginations that Tyre wasn't an influencer, that Tyre wasn't in the game, that Tyre wasn't on the field. There was never a time when this team didn't dominate the sport called economics. And then number three, this city whose feet carried her to settle far away places. There's not a place that hasn't been influenced by this city. She's spread up into Spain, but her influence goes down throughout all the fields of Egypt. It goes across over to Syria. It presses over into Babylon. All of the places that you can imagine have been filled with the resources from this city on planet Earth. Really? A gone? So why is Tyre's worldview so dangerous? We're given the image of a prostitute in coming verses. And this image, Brueggemann writes, is a poignant one by which to refer to the world system of economics, because like a prostitute, that system will do anything for money. Anything for money. Anything for money. The question was asked a young lady, would you sleep with a man for $1 million? She said, oh, absolutely. Man who's not your husband? Absolutely. He said, would you sleep with a man for $10? I said, what kind of woman do you think I am? He said, we've already determined that. We're just trying to find out what price. Anything for money. Would you do anything for money?
No. No.
Would you ever hold a grudge against somebody because of money? Well, yeah, but that's different. Really? Because of money. Would you ever lie on your taxes because of money? Would you ever compromise your work schedule so that you would miss church every single Sunday just so that you can gain a bigger paycheck? Would you do anything for money? Is money the greatest reality in your life? Is economics the greatest reality in your life? Is financial security the greatest reality in your life? If so, that's dangerous. And at the end of the day, when people aren't winners, they become losers at this game. Again, Bob Fiall writes, wealth can give the illusion that anything can be bought and that happiness and security lie in the stockpiling of possessions. We talked last week about being preppers, right? So you have everything. You've got the ammunition, you've got the arsenal, you've got the food, you've got the walls, you've got everything you need to do what? To do what? But where everyone and everything can be bought, real value disappears. You can't buy friends who are in it in the long haul. You can't buy friends that will be there when your spouse dies, when your children get a terminal illness, when your vehicle smashes into something. You can't buy friends who will be there for you and weep with you and care and be present when life turns sour and life turns south. You can't buy that. But when you can buy all your friends, when you can buy all your luxuries, when you can buy all your comforts, you lose the real value of life, as the prodigal son soon found out. When the money was gone, the friends were gone. The lifestyle was done. The party was over. It's come to an end. God has shown us in His Word what His judgment of this world system looks like. In Genesis 6, it looks like the end of the world as we know it, as God sees the evil of men. He sees the thoughts of their heart and their imaginations are only wicked continually. We see His judgment in Genesis chapter 11 at the Tower of Babel, where God has to come down as they're building their way up to God, making a name for themselves, gaining glory so that everyone knows about us. Fame. The winners tonight will blazon their names in lights across something for a while till it's gone. Then we have the judgment in Genesis chapter 19, where fire from heaven falls on Sodom and Gomorrah. It says God not only sees, He comes down, but He knows. He knows. He knows. And as this world system of economics plays out, there is a God who sees, there is a God who knows, and there is a God who will visit planet Earth and reverse the economy and rewrite the rules by which this game is played. Number two, the second landmark conviction of a biblical worldview is not only the judgment of God, but the sovereignty of God. Here we focus on the hand of the God that we need to know. Because life as we know it will discontinue. It's the end of the world as we know it. But there's a hand that governs the world, and we need to know the one who holds the world in his hand. He's writing a story that belongs to him. He's putting on the page that which is his will. Those secret counsels of God are finding experiential fulfillment as he writes his story, because history really is his story. So whereas judgment corresponded to our badness, God's sovereignty corresponds to God's greatness. God's in control. He's in control of absolutely everything. So verse 8, who has purposed this against Tyre? They're the ones who bestow crowns. They're in authority. Their merchants are princes. Their traders are honored. Who has more glory than Tyre? Well, verse 9, it's the Lord of hosts who's purposed this. Why has he purposed this? To defile the pompous pride of all glory. And he uses a word that is probably a little better translated, beauty, glory, beauty, attractiveness. But the word sounds very much like the Lord of hosts, host, Shabaoth. So it's the Lord of hosts who will get glory and defiles the glory of anyone who seeks glory apart from God. Why has God purposed this? To dishonor all who are honored by the earth. Stop and think about that phrase right there. God purposes to dishonor those who are honored by the world. Do you want the world's honor? Be careful how you answer that. Do you want the world's honor for yourself, or do you want the world to see Jesus through you so that they can honor him? Let your light so shine before men that they may give glory to your Father who's in heaven, right? God says, be careful what you wish for. Be careful whose honor you seek, because God has purposed to dishonor those who seek the honor of this world system. He'll do it. He can. He will. He wants to, because it's an unreality, and he is true, and he is good, and he brings beauty and gives beauty. We're going to see what that looks like in just a little bit. Verse 10, cross over your land, daughter of Tarshish, cross over your land like the Nile. Every spring, the Nile would flood over the banks and just kind of spill out. And he's saying, you've been all confined to the city. You've been living the city life, Tarshish. Spill out of the city. Go back to your lands. Go fill out your lands, because all the trade, all the economy that once was the flourishing of your city is done, and you're going to have to make gardens. You're going to have to raise cattle. You're going to have to engage in hard labor rather than cheating somebody out to make another buck. You're going to actually have to do this. Why? Because the restraint, the belt, that which held everything in place is gone. It's gone. It's just done. Verse 11, he has stretched out his hand. Who's he? The Lord. He has stretched out his hand, not over the land, but over the sea. He's shaken kingdoms in faraway places. The Lord has given command concerning Canaan, Phoenicia, to destroy the foundations of this whole world system. And he said, God said, and when he says, things happen. When he speaks, things happen. He has said, you will no more exult, virgin daughter of Sidon. Oh, wait a minute. He calls her the oppressed virgin daughter of Zion. That word carries some baggage. It has the idea of being violated, of being exposed, of being raped. Your beauty, your attractiveness, your loveliness has been consumed. You who traffic in consumerism, you've been consumed. You've been taken down by that which you've held as a god. And then he uses an example, verse 13. Look at the land of the Chaldeans. This is the people that was not. Assyria destined it for wild beasts. They erected their siege towers. They stripped her palaces bare. They made her a ruin. This is probably referring to what I believe it was Sennacherib did. Might have been Sargon. In 703 BC, he defeated Babylon. Well, Babylon's going to rise again. But in defeating Babylon, he did it so exorbitantly that it gained him a name throughout the whole ancient Near East. And Isaiah is saying, probably in 702, early 701 BC, he says, Tyre, look at Babylon. Just look at it. You're next. And in 701, Assyria would come and take down the city of Tyre. And then he says, it's going to be 70 years. 70 years that you're going to be forgotten. Well, about 630, Assyrian influence began to wane, and Tyre's influence began to come back. So he ends up this whole section in verse 14, wail, O ships of Tarshish, the stronghold, the rock that you banked everything on. It's gone. It's done. What are you building your life on today? Jesus uses this picture, doesn't he? He said, my words are truth. And whoever builds on this rock, the rain's going to come, the storm's going to come, the winds are going to blow, but they will stand fast because they're founded on a rock. Or you can build on sand. And when the winds of God's sovereignty and judgment do come, and the storms do blow, and the gales do hover, great is the fall of it. What are you building your life on? For real, for real. What are your hopes? What are your assumptions? What are your presuppositions? What are the tuggings and pullings and desires of your heart? What is the foundation upon which you're building your life? What are the parameters? What are the pages of the story that are defining how you're living this life between your birth date, the dash, and your death date? What rules are you playing by? He says, the rock is going to be gone one day because God is that big. He's more real than money. He's more real than health. He's more real than pleasure. He's more real than friendships. He's more real than anything. Finally, the third convictional landmark that we're given in this passage is mercy. We see a God whose hand we need to know, but we also see a plan of a God who actually knows us. Verse 15, in that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years like the days of one king. But at the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre as in the song of the prostitute. So we're assuming that what's given next is the song of the prostitute. We're given lyrics to the local, and maybe you can write music to this sometime. I'm teasing. But this is the lyrics of a popularly known song. Take the harp. Go about the city, O forgotten prostitute. This is a used up, shriveled up, dried out old woman who used to be chased down by every man in the city port of Tyre. And now she comes to the end, and she's used up, and she's left without her looks, trying to make sweet melody, to sing seductive songs, so that she can gain an audience for one more night. This is what you've been reduced to. Everybody that wanted what you had, you're like, don't need that. Something better. He says in verse 17, but at the end of 70 years, the Lord will visit Tyre. When God visits something, it's either for good or it's for bad. And we're not told exactly what that's going to be like. She's been forgotten. Then she'll return to her wages and will prostitute herself. She'll interact with others for a wage with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. And he's using an analogy here of trade, giving and taking for money, commerce, commercialism, capitalism. But it's not necessarily all evil. Look at the next verse. Her merchandise and her wages will be holy to the Lord. God is going to put Tyre on the map again. She's still on the seacoast. And if Jesus is going to reign over the entire world, guess what? Other people will be bringing resources to this place at some time in the future. And her merchandise will not be stored up for herself. It won't be hoarded. It won't be guarded. It won't be given to the select few. It won't be given to the elite. But her merchandise will supply not just food, rich food, abundant food, much food, and fine clothing for those who dwell before the Lord. Tyre is going to have a different role in the future economy of the world. Not where she's trying to get and take and best somebody. I remember back in sixth grade, I used to get fruit roll-ups every day, sitting at the lunch table, and a guy had a really cool pencil box. Had all the multiplication tables on there and had a little plastic thing that you could slide and figure out your... I said, man, that's cool. He said, can I have one of your fruit roll-ups? I said, I'll give you a fruit roll-up if you give me a pencil box. I don't know. He'd asked me for 3 days. Finally, he said, okay. It only cost me one fruit roll-up. I can go home and grab another one of those, right? We are built on getting from others in order to benefit ourselves. Tyre is going to have a new heart. God's going to work in her such a way that everything she gets belongs to God. She's not going to hoard. She's not going to keep. She's not going to take advantage. She's going to be changed fundamentally from the inside out so that she becomes a part of the work God is doing on planet Earth. She's playing by different rules at this point. She's living a different story at this point. But it comes through the sovereign judgment of God. So as we close things down this morning, I want to remind you that you are living in a story. Well, we're reminded about God's judgment, right? We've been looking at this for many times through this oracles to the nations in the book of Isaiah. God has judgment and it's coming. But he's a God of judgment and mercy. And judgment isn't the last word God speaks. Why? Because mercy, God's mercy, is at the heart of the gospel. It's at the heart of God's good news to planet Earth. His mercy triumphs over judgment. Aren't you thankful for that? Which of us hasn't built on the foundation, the rock of capitalism, commerce, and consumerism? We're all told that story. We're all said that needs to be our primary focus. God says, listen, let me show you who you are. Let me reduce you. Let me take all of your values and bring them down to nothing, and then let me give you value. You used up, dried out old prune. When you've got nothing left, let me claim you to be my bride. You are living your life within a story. You are. The question is, which story? Which story are you living in? Which story are you occupying? Whose voice are you listening to? What influence is shaping the choices, the desires, the lusts of your heart? Those things that you will give anything in order to see accomplished in your life. God isn't looking for a hero. He wants to be the hero in your story. And actually, it's his story, right? God doesn't need a hero. He doesn't need somebody to take gold, to take silver, to take bronze. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need somebody to be a winner so that somebody can be a loser. God's not looking for that. God has already sent the hero. And there's only room for one hero in this story. But it's a story of sovereign justice and mercy. Aren't you thankful? Aren't you thankful for God's mercy? Aren't you thankful that God is great and he's going to break the back of that which is evil? Aren't you thankful that though we're included in that, he has mercy for us? Because of Jesus. That's where Isaiah brings this. Jerusalem, where the priest people of God are assembled, they're assembled there because of Jesus. They're worshiping King Jesus, and on his shoulders is the weight of the government of the world. And his kingdom will have no end, along with the peace that he brings. Jesus is our hero. We occupy his story. Remember that this week, and ask God to show where you're living by a different story. Let's pray.